I thought, since we have this quiet time, we could, this little gap between these two larger events, we could talk about something a little intimate. Something that is part of our practice and part of our daily activity, and yet often gets unnoticed or neglected. The original teachings of the Buddha had to do with a kind of balance or a kind of central place. He started out in a very imbalanced state. He was a spoiled rich kid, basically. He was a golden boy. He had a very wonderful existence, and he saw through that, and he immediately turned his view and took another viewpoint, which we could say in retrospect it was reactionary. He decided to cut off this indulgence, to renounce, to take the renunciant's life, the shramana's life. Shramana means striver, someone who strives. He changed his view, and he had a switch, and he very strictly and thoroughly entered this shramana life, which is the life of the renunciate, and did many, as most of you know, did many activities, ascetic activities that pushed his body and his mind to the extreme. And he finally came to the point where he realized that extreme view didn't work. He was not functioning physically or mentally well. And he took food, he sort of restored his balance, and he came back to a middle place. He came back to balance. He came back to a middle place that was neither too tight nor too loose, that was comprehensive, that took care of his whole body and mind, and didn't necessarily reject the extremes, but he found this working space right in the middle. And that's, as the story goes, that's where he woke up. So what I want to talk about a little bit today, and hopefully we can discuss, because it's a kind of loaded topic, is What is right view, or what is a view in relationship to this practice? The Buddha's, another part of the Buddha's teaching is called the Eightfold Path. Most of you know the Eightfold Path. It's also extremely comprehensive. It includes like the whole person. It just doesn't have to do with intellect. It doesn't have to do with ethics. It doesn't have to do with just ethics or just meditation or just knowledge. but it has to do with all three. So in a sense, like the Eightfold Path is comprehensive. It's a kind of package of the whole being, how the whole being moves forward. And that's how the teachings slowly became, I guess you could say, codified or brought together as a kind of working group. And what's interesting about the Eightfold Path is that you would think, at least I initially thought, that kind of like the Zen saying that first you clean and then you sit. In other words, first you kind of clean up your act, you kind of take care of yourself ethically, make a wholesome, good environment, and then when you've made a wholesome, good environment, then you've made a kind of place, a good working place to meditate or to come to knowledge. So I would have thought with the Eightfold Path that it would start with ethics, like first right action and right speech and right livelihood. But the first of the Eightfold Path, it begins with right view. Interesting, huh? First, before anything else, before you even sort of take care of your messy life, you actually work on your view. Now, all these things, the Eightfold Path, it's all kind of one unit. It's all one activity. So to say one comes first or not. But anyway, this is the way it's come to us, and I think it's very interesting that the first one is right view. Right view means understanding as well, right understanding, coming to understand. And it's associated with prajna, with wisdom, so right knowledge. So this is the first of the Eightfold Path. This is the first step to have the right view. So what I'd like to discuss today is what is right view? Goodness, what is right view? What are we talking about? I mean, we have a practice tradition here, and we have a whole lineage of people that came before us and practiced, and we have Buddhist literature that is vast. There's lots of writings, the Pali Canon and so on and so forth. Is that right view? Or did you want to say something?
The obvious. It's not wrong view. Wrong view.
Good point.
It's not the left view either.
Thank you. Not the left view.
Right and left.
I think for me, it's who's you. Not right or left or wrong, right, just who shows up.
Who shows up? Who shows up? That's good. Who shows up? Who's here? Who's asking? Huh? Mm-hmm. Like, have I arrived yet?
I've never understood what right meant.
You know, I've trouble with that word too.
To me, it must be to have a view. To view. To open your eyes. To view.
To see things. Actually, the Sanskrit word samyak, it's the same thing as samyak sambodhi, if you know that in our chant. It means complete and perfect. Mm. It's finished In other words, it's like thorough. It's not partial. It's complete. And it's perfected. In other words, it's refined. It's brought up to a level. Rather than in contrast to right or wrong, or right and left. Or not to compare myself with Buddha, please excuse me, but I had a when I was young, I felt like I had a very good life. I grew up in a university town, Madison, Wisconsin, and my father was an artist, and I had a happy childhood. I can't complain about. Actually, I could complain about a lot of stuff, but I mean, if you pin me down, comparative to a lot of other people who've had tough childhoods, I was pretty lucky, and I had plenty to eat, and I was pretty well indulged by my father, who liked me being an artist, and my mother took really good care of us and loved us. So an American dream. It was okay. And I have to say that from that situation, I got imbalanced. I developed a kind of artistic idealism that really messed me up. I alternately thought A, I was a great artist, or that I had to engage this grand heroic activity of the artistic struggle, suffer and paint and create masterpieces that no one appreciates, and just do this great heroic work. It wasn't all the time vain, but I had a very idealistic view, and it, in retrospect, I can say that it really made me imbalanced. And I suffered a lot because I wasn't taking care of myself, and I wasn't getting my needs met. I wasn't taking care of relationships with myself and with other people. I was pursuing this ideal, and I was not seeing things as they are. I had a wrong view, I had a partial view. And later on, when I started to get involved in Buddhism, I heard Koban talk and other people at Naropa, the first year at Naropa, and got really excited about meditation. I got into the renunciant sort of frame of mind, and I abandoned or didn't take care of other parts of my life because I got excited. I got imbalanced about following the way, and so I made another mistake on the other side. I tried too hard, and I didn't take care of myself. Maybe other people have similar experiences that way. Particularly when you're young, you get these real strong idealistic views that spin you in one direction or another. Japanese have a word called tambakan. 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 And Tambakan, the image of Tambakan, it's someone who's carrying a board on their shoulder. They're carrying this big beam on their shoulder, and they're walking along. And what do they see? They only see half of the world, right? Exactly. Yes. Unless you had a rear view or a mirror attached to the board or something. Yeah.
I want to come back to complete perfect and right view, because I don't believe that I can ever find a complete perfect view. Also, you justify that in terms of Suzuki Roshi's book, where he talks about our life as being sort of an unbalanced experience in the background, with the background of perfect harmony, that we ourselves are just stumbling, moving. So where is complete perfect? Where is right view?
Maybe complete perfect view takes into account imperfect view.
And I feel that the view is a continually changing thing. You know, I mean, I've experienced in my life, you know, like you're talking about your youth, my viewpoints are almost 180 degrees different now than they were then. And at that stage, I thought I had the right, perfect view at the time. You know, so maybe as we learn more or gain more wisdom, then our viewpoints do change. There's a continual change in that.
Or soften, you could say, or become more transparent. Or more flexible.
I'd like to say that the way that the Buddhists were presenting it, even during Buddhist times, probably right view had to do more with Buddhists is compared to a doctor, a physician, coming to treat our illness. Our illness is delusion. We suffer because of delusion, and that because of that delusion we have all sorts of extra suffering, attachments, all kinds of things, and not a very clear view. And his main point seemed to be, look, life is suffering, it's inherent in it. It's inherently, actually, more accurately, unsatisfactory. That's what they say that translates to when it says life is, well, life is inherently in unsatisfactory in its nature. So when I think of Mick Jagger singing, I Can't Get No Satisfaction. That's really exactly what, and if you listen to the song, that's what he's at the time when he's singing about.
That's a Buddhist song.
It actually is. Yeah, it's kind of funny that way, you know? But, so it's kind of this view that the world isn't going to make you happy, but, you know, from time to time it might. But living in the right way and changing your view about what's really going to work for you in life, that, to me, seems like that's probably a lot more what the right view he's talking about. The other is, when you're, the younger you are, the more naive you are, generally. You know, there's a few people that seem to be old souls and kind of have an idea of it. So, of course, and also in your spiritual practice, you go through experiences that your view really gets revamped, because somehow you know more after certain waking up things that happen. And always our view is being recompiled. One, especially after those incidents. But the basic one in the beginning was probably, look, don't take the world as fun and games. You'll be disappointed. It's suffering. And there's a reason why, and here's how practicing this.
There's certain conditions and events and experiences that where a view or an attitude might seem to be more flexible or subjective, but we also have a view of, like, what this room is. What is this room? I mean, is it a barn for animals, for animals that wear clothes, or is it a place of meditation? You know? I mean, we have an agreement here that this, don't we? We have an agreement, sort of. No, we don't have an agreement. Not yet. We're working on an agreement.
Gotta get more inclusive. I think his point about naivete, or how do you say it?
Naivete.
It's really, that's how you say it. Where that gets smacked down by, you know, needing to see the broader view, the more inclusive view, is where that suffering comes from. And your acceptance of being naive is where I think the suffering abates a little, and you can be more open to the next time you get smacked down with your limited view, you know, that mm-hmm. your naive view mm-hmm. what you think is real, mm-hmm. really going on. It's a gentler term than wrong view. You're just naive.
Mm-hmm.
I think back to the view that the ancients had of cosmology. And with their eyes, they could only see as far as they could see. And that's how we all are. We can only see as far as we can see. And that may seem like a right view, but then that also connects with the emphasis that we have in our practice on seeking to see boundlessness, striving to understand the boundlessness, that even if we can't see it, that there's still boundlessness. And that's the only way that, so far, I can understand why that would be first to me, full path, almost seeming like a prerequisite.
Mm-hmm. Sets the stage in a way, huh? Yeah.
It would be impossible for us to really have a perfect and complete view. But if we know that, if we at least have the view that our view is right, and that boundlessness is out there, maybe that's the easiest.
There was a teacher named Zhao Zhou, and Zhao Zhou, well, before he was a teacher, he was a student of Nanquan, and he came to Nanquan and he said, "What is the way?" And Nanquan said, "Ordinary mind, everyday mind is the way. This mind, ordinary mind, is the way." And Zhao Zhou said, "Hey, shall I work on that? Shall I try for that?" And Nanquan said, "If you try it, you can try for it. But if you try for it, you'll miss it." And Zhao Zhou said, "Well, how can I know this way if I don't try? How can I know the way if I don't try?" And Nanquan said, "This knowing that you're referring to, this knowing, it's not about knowing. It's not knowing. If you think you know something, if you strive to know something, it's a kind of delusion. It's a mistake. If you don't try, you're just ignorant. Find that place. Find that place that is knowing and not knowing together, and enter there." And that was enough for him. He got it. He woke up with that. Zhao Zhou walked away a different person.
Yeah,
It's called, in Sanskrit, it's called, they actually had a term for this, which interests me because I like Sanskrit terms because they're, unlike English terms, they're big packages, and it's called, it's a mouthful, Anapadika Dharma Kshanti. Kshanti is sometimes translated patience, like Kshanti Paramita, the perfection of patience.
Or peace.
Kshanti, it also means a tolerance, and it also means acceptance. So, dharma here means anything. It means phenomena, it means events, it means experiences, it means stuff, anything that happens. And anupadika means, anu is a negative, padika means to know, to come to knowledge. So, anupadika dharma kshanti means, this is a practice. I mean, they had a term for it. They were actually working on this. Tolerance of, or acceptance of, the unknowability of dharmas, of things, of events, of experiences, of myself. So we can have a view, and in fact, it's impossible not to have a view of, say, I have a view of who Doug is, you know? But it is possible for me to not have a fixed view, like the Metta Sutra? Not holding to fixed views when we chant that. It is possible for me to not have a fixed view of who Doug is, to actually soften my view and make room for Doug to be free in the middle of my view of whoever Doug is. And then if he changes, I won't be too surprised or shocked. If he changes into, say, John, I won't be too surprised. Well, maybe I'll be a little surprised.
In walking through the woods or down the street, sometimes I think about shadows and
how they're ignored, right?
Yeah, and they're innumerable. I mean, you can use the sun as the main, or the moon as creating shadows, but we actually shadow each other from all angles. And
we kind of flavor each other, the person that we meet. Is that what you mean?
It could mean that. I was thinking more in terms of like, Michael is, his light is shining on me and puts a shadow over here. And it works in all different directions, whether it's a tree that is illuminating and it creates a shadow. I mean, there could be a lot of different kinds of shadows that could be created depending on how you define shadow. Typically it's with a light. Mm-hmm. And there's an object, but it could be an object that has, we normally don't think of it as generating light, but still it casts a shadow on all that it's looking at. So you have all these different things casting shadows.
And the activity of casting shadows defines that thing or that event as unique, as just itself, right? In fact, it needs both the light and the absence of light to make an edge, to make a thing.
Mm-hmm. And there's infinite possibility in all of it. I mean, that's ongoing. So what's the right view? Which angle is? So all you do is keep walking.
Don't.
It's wrong by definition. Mm-hmm. And you take anything and you find the dimensions of it.
Actually, understanding view as view is practice. Understanding view as view. So in the midst of coming to meet Doug and recognizing that I'm bringing to Doug a view, help, you know. Yeah.
It's like I used to say, well, like I believe this or I believe that, and I've sort of changed that to the point now where I say I choose to do.
You acknowledge your responsibility in that. That's really, I like that.
Not my,
yeah.
Because the belief thing makes me like absolute. So I choose to have this aspect. I choose to have this viewpoint.
Or to emphasize something or another.
It's a viewpoint, huh? Because it may change in the future. You know?
Yeah.
So this is sort of like what I'm looking at. You know? So it's like a choice.
When people practice together, they live together in like a Chikoji. Sometimes it's hard work. It's kind of like getting married and then all your spouse's relatives move in with you or something. You didn't really invite these people here, but here they are, and they're part of your family, for goodness sakes, you know. And it's hard to live together, so there's many adjustments and many views about how to live together in this unique way. So how to, what you said is really good, that you choose to acknowledge your responsibility in actually establishing bias, you could say, or a particular viewpoint.
I think this right view is so hard to define. Everybody thinks differently about it. I just think of it as having my head screwed on right about the essence of practice. And then the right view in that moment will emerge.
Mm-hmm.
The not knowing, the knowing, the ordinary mind. But it's not fixed. It will happen. With enough attention. That's the idea.
I think you're true. It's important to bring up the idea of presence or being in the present moment with this, because so much of holding fixed views has to do with expectations in the future or ideas about how things were in the past. But to actually meet each moment or each person fresh it's hard to do, but it's a practice to actually be available to. This is called being available to suchness, the suchness of the present moment, to actually be empty of a view, and then see what happens. See who you are. See who Edith is without my idea of Edith. Wow. I wasn't expecting that, but that's Edith. or even, I think it's actually even more difficult in ourselves because we carry a big package of how we should be in relation to the world, or what, you know, we deserve more, or I made a mistake and I'm helpless, I'm hopeless, you know. So a lot of judgments, a lot of stuff comes up about how we view ourselves. Coben said about the precept of no being angry. It said, self-nature is mysterious and profound. And in the midst of one dharma, one great dharma, no measuring of self is the precept of no being angry. Isn't that interesting? Of no measuring of a self is the precept of no, not letting anger, not being anger.
I had an interesting experience this week. I'm not an angry person at all. Don't get angry. A dog bit me.
Oh, ouch.
Like violently bit me.
Are you okay?
Oh, I'm fine, yeah. I had a sleeve and didn't have blood or anything. But I had to put my arm up to stop the dog from biting me anywhere else. And the dog scurried away, and I was furious that this dog had bitten me. And for an hour or so, I held on to it, maybe less than that. And then I just had this view of the situation that it was just anger. It wasn't.
You saw this phenomena.
It was just an arising of an emotion, and there wasn't a need to attach it to.
Yeah.
And it just vanished like smoke. It's remarkable.
That's great. Not taking it personally. Like, yeah. The dog wasn't out
there when you needed it, you know.
That's true. Yeah, it was a complete physiological reaction. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just a view. Mm-hmm. Just a different view of the situation.
Well, I had a dog bite me within the last year, too. A large dog who rushed out. I was on the sidewalk and the last thing I expected, and I wasn't going through the woods or anything. I had a very different reaction. It sort of went into slow motion. Oh, this dog is biting me. You know, this is happening, kind of thing. And then the owner, who was a woman, rushed out and was very apologetic and brought me in the house and, you know, doctored me and stuff. And the dog was, you know, my dog was quiet, you know, and I stopped. And so no anger happens at all. However, if someone tries to pass me on the road,
it's funny how fast it can come up. Yeah, you rude driver.
That situation.
Yesterday, we had a situation where fixed view could have arisen. We're painting the cabinets in the kitchen, and we need knobs, and the knobs aren't the right color. But so what color should they be? Should they be brushed bronze? Should they be gold-plated? Should they be... And then suddenly the playfulness of the situation arose, where it was like, well, let's make each one different. Let's make them as each one a separate fruit. And then it was like pushing it to the limit of absurdity in a way, in a playful way. And then, you know, because what's the view going to be? We'll find out. But it's... I just really appreciate the playfulness that arises in the moment, like in interchanges like that between you and Kendra. That was really fun.
For me, it seems like talking about the right view is coming away from the view of the ego and towards the view of the not holding on to fixed views. And I guess holding on to fixed views is a function of the ego too. And we all seem to have this very active role in the right view. And perhaps the right view is more of a passive role, more of an observer, meaning actively doing something instead of just, this is the way I view it, so that's the way it is. More like, I am doing this. So maybe the right view isn't so much your view, but just a view. You know, if you go to the Grand Canyon and you stand there on the edge, that's a view. It's not your view, it's just a view.
Mm-hmm.
It's
easy for us to be neutral about that. Mm-hmm. But if we're looking over the railing and we're seeing the mistake you made yesterday or something like that, or then it's really hard to see it as just a view.
Mm-hmm.
But that is our practice.
Yeah, we have a political view, and that's something to stand on a little stronger.
Right? Now, don't get me angry.
Well, we're
ego, yeah. That's a big ego thing. Politics.
So Nanquin said, knowing has nothing to do with it. Knowing is fundamentally illusion. And when we think about it, the data that comes into us gets, feed forward reasoning or... Where all your datum comes in, that's just a little bit of the actual electrical energy that goes into actually forming a thought. But the actual 90% of the thought is like you in a committee room, sort of, with all your members of your board and your committee and your advisory panel and everything, deciding that this is a zendo, and then it comes out. So it is biased. So you can understand how he says knowing is actually a kind of illusion, and not knowing is ignorance. So find that place that is, you could say, both knowing and not knowing, or neither knowing or not knowing, and enter there.
And that might resemble, well, for example, someone says, what's your view, what's your religious or spiritual view? And I wouldn't answer, they said, what's your spiritual, I wouldn't answer, it's not mine. I'm saying, well, the Buddhist and the Eastern view, that comes pretty close to how I sense things are. I'm not claiming it for my own, I'm not saying, this is it, you can't change it, you know, I'm not hanging on to it. Just saying, yeah, it's there.
However, you're not a Republican, right?
I'm certainly not. I'm not wealthy enough.
I like that image of someone going to a river and taking a bucket of water out of the river and then walking around and saying, I'm carrying the river. I'm holding the river. And we do that. We do that. We really do that. We have a little piece of the truth. We have a little insight. We have a little awareness of how things fit together, and we say we have the whole river. We do have the whole river. I think it's true. We do have the whole river, but we don't contain the whole river. The whole river is vast. It's beyond us. So find that place, that soft place that is accepting everything and choosing, and negotiate the way. Is that enough? Is it lunchtime? Is it lunchtime? I'm hungry. Is anyone else hungry? Does anyone have a view about hunger?
Well, my view is that I'm hungry.
Just let your stomach go.
I have the uncomfortable feeling that we, by discussing things, sort of hijacked your talk. Is that?
No, it was good. It's good. You saved my talk.
You didn't really have a talk.
Actually, Donna Lynn was talking.
Press the middle button
at
once.
At 2:00, if anyone wants to come for tea,